serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Bill Koning of Modesto, California is our guest today. Originally from Grand Rapids, Michigan, he served with the 86th Infantry Division in Europe during World War II. The Black Hawk Division was supposed to go to the Pacific and had undergone extensive amphibious training, but the impact of the Battle of the Bulge increased the need for infantry units in Europe. The 86th saw its first action along the Rhine River in March of 1945, went on to fight through the Ruhr Industrial Valley and into southern Germany. Your division was credited with liberating a forced labor camp at Attendorn. You weren't there personally, but you said you've got a story about American prisoners who were liberated.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Bob Gleib, we're walking down the road, and here comes a couple in there, Air Force prisoners. We say, "What outfit are you from?" or something, or they'd say, "Tell us who they were." So he said, 93rd Squadron or something like that. And Bob was walking behind me, and not behind me, Bob was off someplace else. I only can repeat this story as it happened. He was someplace else, and he asks one of the guys, "What outfit you from?" 96. And he said, "Oh, my brother was in the 96th. He was captured. Do you know my brother? Who is he?" Tom Leib. He said, "Yeah, he's right down the street there." And so the guy liberated his own brother.
Wow.
And so the thing they took him to, they brought him to our place and put him in our company headquarters, let him clean up, give him a good food, and then send him back. So he had one good meal with him, and he went. But anyway, it's just one of those little incidents that happened.
And with 16 million Americans
16
in
millions
uniform.
And you find one.
How about that? That's hard to believe. What are the odds? Well, when you got that news that Germany had surrendered, what did that mean to you?
The future was still indefinite. You didn't know what was going to happen next. You were trying to say yes or no, sir, and you took it as it came. There wasn't anybody saying, "Oh, now we can go home and go to school." Nobody doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It just happened. I can remember the lieutenant coming and saying, "Hey, the war's over, but you still got Japan."
Exactly. And I want to ask you about that. But now with 70-plus years of hindsight, and I know you were only there for the last 3 months of World War II in Europe, but you told us how close you came to not coming home, and you were part of this larger effort to liberate Europe from this Nazi regime, to free prisoners from all those concentration camps, those that were still alive, that your ancestral homeland, where your grandparents came from, the Netherlands, that it was liberated because of you guys over there. Is there something that you take pride or satisfaction in with regard to what you did in Europe in World War II?
I take pride in being a soldier in World War II. I do take pride. I stand straight on that. I was lucky, very fortunate. And if I really want to get mundane about it, I can say I was saved to do something. But I can. I have had a very good life. Had four beautiful children, wonderful wife. Went to school, got an education, ran food plants for General Foods all around the country. And so, that was my want in life. I'm very proud of what I did. Yeah, from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And at the time, so you're a 19-year-old kid still, and they bring you guys back to the States because there is still a war going on
in the
Pacific.
There's still a war going on.
And you guys were going to play a pretty important role in that war in the Pacific.
We were going to invade the Red Beach in Japan, Tokyo. I saw the orders one time, and where we little red star where we were supposed to go in.
So your outfit was gonna hit Tokyo, which of all the places in Japan that they would want to defend, there you go. Yeah. And the defenses would have been heavy and insane everywhere, but you guys would have gone right to the heart of Tokyo.
Yeah.
You guys were training, and you guys were actually...
It was really a smart move on their standpoint. We knew amphibious training. We were blooded, and we were the ones of us that last knew combat. We knew when to duck, and so it was a smart move as far as the Army is concerned. So they brought us home, gave us a 30-day furlough, came back out to California, and I was advance party aboard the troop ship, and I looked down over the top, and the people are all dancing in the streets because the atomic bomb had been dropped.
And to your point, so people understand what you're saying, you guys were uniquely qualified because originally you were going to go to Okinawa. You had all that amphibious training. Now you've had the combat experience in Europe. That's over. So of everybody out there, you guys were one of the best options for that task
that
they had for you.
That's right.
But when you look over the side and you see them dancing in the streets of San Francisco, you knew you weren't going to have to go anymore?
You didn't know that yet. We didn't know that until we'd been aboard that troop ship for 2 weeks. We're sitting out in the middle of the Pacific going to Japan, and the airplanes went overhead VJ.
They formed that in the sky?
They formed that in the sky. And so we took a left turn and went to the Philippines.
Wow. Now, I don't want to be, melodramatic or put thoughts in your head, but I'm just wondering, of 72 years since then, has any year gone by where VJ Day rolls around and you don't look up in the sky and visualize that?
Yeah, I can see it. They had formed a VJ up there and they were flying around the island.
So then what did you guys do aboard that ship?
Oh, they cheered. I don't remember. And landed in Batangas in the Philippines. And from then on, it was goof off and put us in a camp. I can remember getting a pass one time and going to Clark Field and seeing the guys laying against the bomber. A big bomber that came out. It was a B-29 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Hadn't seen that before. And then I was signed an advance party for, they were going to reconstitute the Filipino scouts. I had half a dozen guys cooked and a lieutenant. And suddenly I was the first sergeant in the headquarters company of the new Filipino scout. And I didn't know even how to keep a stick poke. And I can remember grizzled old first sergeant who called MacArthur Doug and Eisenhower Ike. He'd been in the Army that long. He was the battalion sergeant, and I was a company sergeant. But I really didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any knowledge of it. Really got one of the biggest, finest chew in my life. We had to provide guard duty because they were afraid. There was something called the Hukbelahops in the Philippines. I guess they were communists. And they were kind of raiding places. So we had to put people on guard duty. And so I did it one time, and my cooks had to go out and be guard duty. That was the unfortunate thing, that they stood at attention in the guard thing before they went out. And the colonel of the outfit came through, and he inspected them that Sunday afternoon. And so they came up to the guy that was standing there with a pistol. He didn't know what to do with it. I had told him he could carry his pistol because he was going to drive a Jeep. He wasn't going to be able to fire his rifle. He didn't know how to fire a rifle. He was a cook. And so I told him he could carry that pistol. He didn't even know how to show the colonel that pistol, how to open it or anything like that. And so the colonel called me, told him to get me, and they came running in. I was taking a shower, and I got dressed up and went, and I got the best tune I've ever had. He went up one side of me and down the other. I was going to lose all my stripes, I thought. And he didn't take my stripes away.
The damage was done. He got his point across.
I was discharged in April. But in the meantime, the guys I'd been all in combat with and my squad and all that sort of thing were back in this camp in Batangas. They had athletic programs and all that kind of stuff going. And I just sat there and looked at the walls of the tent for 12 hours a day.
How good did it feel to come back home?
You were glad you were going out. You were going to be done with it. You didn't have any thought of what school you were going to. I can remember I had no thought at that point in time. I knew I was going to go to school, but not where. You had no idea what the GI Bill would mean. No, you're just glad to be going back home.
Was that a pretty lengthy hug from your mother when you showed back up in Grand Rapids?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And what about Phyllis? Were you a little more serious about her once you got back?
Not really. We saw each other on occasion again. We dated. She was at Ann Arbor, and I went to Ann Arbor because of her. I'm sure of that.
Uh-huh. So you get a mechanical engineering degree at the University of Michigan. You go to work for General Foods. That's what brought you here to California in 1970. You've been in Modesto ever since. And eventually, you and Phyllis got married.
Yeah.
Had almost 66 years of marriage before you lost her. Now you got kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. Have you ever had that thought? Boy, this whole life I know, all these descendants, that none of this would have happened if those close calls were a little closer?
Oh, yeah. You think about it, but not in any mountain way at all. It's lucky.
Well, and you said that if you really think about it, maybe you were saved for other things in this life that you had.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Is that something you think God was protecting you?
Yes, very definitely. He had something planned. He usually doesn't tell you what he's going to do.
Funny how that works. But his plans are always better than ours, once we see it. Well, and anything else that you think is relevant, I want to hear. But you had an opportunity here a couple years ago to travel from here in California to Washington, D.C., with Central Valley Honor Flight, see the World War II Memorial and other sites in the Capitol. In fact, we're sitting in your office, and there's a picture of your whole group on the wall there. What was that experience like for you? What were the things that stuck with you?
Well, I've always been proud that I was an infantryman, very proud of that. Now, I couldn't have been in the Air Force. I wore glasses. My eyes weren't good enough. I wore glasses in about the sixth grade on or something like that. And so I've always been a part. So I feel that I'm something special when I stand next to that Air Force guy. And yet I had it easy.
Wow.
And I have no idea what they did. I've talked to them, sure, and I've got friends that were pilots and all that sort of thing. But I've also been proud of it as an infantryman because I really did experience what it is.
Well, and you've shared that with us and helped us get a feel for what it was like. And you mentioned the people that you knew who were killed, and even that your eventual wife's brother was killed in this war. When you were in Washington, D.C., at the World War II Memorial, and you look at that big wall of gold stars, 406,000 Americans who didn't come home, didn't have the life like you've had. What did you think about? What were the things going through
your mind?
It's
a deep thought that you have. I didn't have tears in my eyes, but it was a very emotional thing for me. And I think about that, those 4,000 stars. How do you explain that to somebody, what it is? You can't do it, really. I had an opportunity to talk to some high school kids, and you get to that point and there's no way I can express it. At least I haven't found a way to express it.
Yeah, you're in a city, Modesto, with the population that's about half of that.
Yeah.
Take a couple Modestos and just wipe them out.
Yeah.
That is hard to fathom. Did you find yourself reflecting on some of those individuals you knew that represented that number?
No. It just, you wish you could take everybody and have them stand right there and look at that thing for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Just to realize, and particularly the people that are running this country. And you know, we got a president now that's going to throw the army here, going from there, put them there, here. And hey, go to that wall and stand there for a little while before you shoot your mouth off.
And right underneath that wall, it says in big capital letters, "Here we mark the price of freedom."
Yeah.
Well, that part of your journey was a sobering part. You described it as a deep thought you felt there looking at that. I'm sure there are some other parts of those 3 days you had on the honor flight that put a big smile on your face.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the, I had a real good buddy looking over for me, and I saw my son, Tom Medicine. He joined us, too. So, I had a lot of fun. I'd recommend it to anybody.
For people listening, your son, Tom, is not only an Army colonel, he is a West Point graduate.
Yes.
Did your Army service in World War II have something to do with his wanting to go to West Point?
I don't think so. He's a very dedicated Army person. I'm very proud of him. He's very upright. Nice kid to have. I got four beautiful sons.
Again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just wondering if you can help us understand what it was like to share that experience with your son, to go to those places with your son in our nation's capital, and reflect on the service that both of you have given to our country.
I'm very proud of him, and he was ready to so-called lay down his life, and I don't think he ever had a thought that's what he was doing. It was just his duty to do whatever he did. He was in Iraq, head of the Corps of Engineer Work for the lower third of Iraq, traveling in a Continental, armored bottom, armored tank, armored glass. Wherever they went at 90 miles an hour, and he had to patrol his third of Rack that way as a colonel in that car through those people, some of whom were stealing the wire off the poles and the pumps, and it wouldn't work because they stole all the copper out of the wire from the pumps. He had to deal with sometimes with some of the sheiks that were head of the little towns and fixing the water pipes, fixing the power pumps. Mm-hmm. The engineer did a lot of work there. I'm proud of him.
I know he's proud of you too, as well you both should be. Well, and I guess that's one of my other questions, and I need to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling
You're
us
welcome.
This story, and helping us understand it. What are you most proud of when you look back at almost 92 years now?
That I was able to survive. Well, I'm proud of being a soldier, yeah. As you look back at that, I'm proud of other things too, but I'm proud I served. I'm proud I was in combat. I put my life on the line. I was willing to do that. I'm not willing. I was ordered to.
Is there something, you mentioned going to speak to high school students, and you said you'd love to take all the leaders of our country and let them sit there and soak in the World War II Memorial. As far as those of us alive today who didn't live through World War II, is there something you think we need to know or something that's most important for us to realize or remember about what you and all those other Americans did?
Well, I don't think I get that deep into those kind of thoughts. I wish there was some way we could make people understand that the military is not another set of cops. This is somebody that's out there putting their life on the line for them. It's also a good place to become a man, and a lot of these high school kids need that.
Well, I know it worked out pretty well for you, and you are a sterling example for those young people to emulate. Bill Koning, soon celebrating his 92nd birthday in Modesto, California. Find his smiling face at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.